Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, how did Nora Gold decide the order in which to put the stories in the book? Dr. Nora Gold is a prize-winning author and the founder and editor of the prestigious online literary journal JewishFiction.net, which publishes first-rate Jewish-themed fiction that was either written in English or translated into English from 20 languages, and which has readers in 140 countries. In 2017, we spoke with her about her work and JewishFiction.net, and we're including a link to that program on this page. Dr. Gold's latest book, which will be released on October 17th, is 18, Jewish Stories Translated from 18 Languages. These are all stories or excerpts of novels by writers from a wide range of geographical and linguistic backgrounds. While they're all Jewish-themed, the stories themselves are very varied. Some are realistic, some magical, some historical, some including folkloric themes. The book includes biographical information about each author and also about each translator. Dr. Gold spoke with us about the book and the unique challenges and benefits of publishing works translated from so many different languages.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Nora. We did a program in 2017 about JewishFiction.net, and we'll include a link to that program. But for those of our listeners who haven't heard it or may not remember, could you briefly tell us about JewishFiction.net and how it started and how it has evolved since then?
Certainly, Linda. And thank you very much for having me on your show. I'm really honored to be here. JewishFiction.net is an online literary journal that I started in 2010. At the time, it was, and it still is, the only literary journal in the English language devoted exclusively to Jewish fiction, the only journal either online or in print. To date, we've published over 550 works of fiction, never before published in English. We published things that were either written in English or translated into English from another language, but were never before published in English. To date, we have published translations from 20 languages. And I know we'll be talking about my book. We'll get to that in a moment. But all of the stories or novel excerpts in that book were first published in JewishFiction.net. And I could have actually made a book out of 20 languages, but I wanted to do 18 because of Chai. JewishFiction.net, which started in 2010, is now, of course, 13 years old. It's bar mitzvah year. And about a third of the works published there are translated works, which is, I would say, around 30%. So that's something we're very proud of. And we're very committed to making this a journal of Jewish fiction from around the world. You know, when many people think about Jewish fiction, English speakers think about Jewish fiction. For the most part, they think only of English language fiction. Usually, they think only about American, not Canadian, British, Australian, South African, whatever. But they certainly don't think of anything in translated from another language other than maybe Yiddish, Hebrew, or Judeo-Spanish, Ladino. But for the most part, they have no idea what's out there. That's feedback we got over and over and over from our readers. We have readers in 140 countries, and over I was hearing, oh, we didn't even know this existed. I just knew about American Jewish, right? So we're very proud of what we've been able to accomplish so far. And the journal is free of charge, by the way, which is a matter of principle for us. So anybody who wants can read this journal.
Now, when you say Jewish literature, Do you mean fiction that is written by Jewish writers or that has Jewish themes or both? In other words, what is Jewish literature?
Well, Jewish fiction, of course, literature is a broader term than fiction, so I'll limit myself specifically to fiction, which is my bailiwick. This is a huge and very controversial issue, actually, Linda. There have been hundreds of books written about it and articles and interviews, and people debate this issue hotly. I won't go into a long explanation, which I could, and in fact, the book, 18, Jewish Stories Translated from 18 Languages, in the introduction, I deal with that issue there. So everybody makes their own, draws their own lines, takes on their own definitions. My take on the issue, which is different from other people's perhaps, is that it is not about Jewish authorship. It is not sufficient for, or necessary even, for the work to be written by a Jew. It is not sufficient, although it is necessary, for the work to have Jews in it. And most important, there must be Jewish content. I personally don't believe that it has to be written by Jews. And actually, in my book, there are a couple of stories written by non-Jews, translated by non-Jews, and clearly Jewish fiction. The definition that I consider the most profound and all-encompassing is the one that Ruth Weiss came up with and used in her book, The Modern Jewish Canon. And there she talks about Jewish fiction being work that reflects Jewish consciousness, Jewish experience, and that whole flavor of the work, which of course is a very broad space to work within, but I think it captures very much what I look for when I'm assessing the works that are submitted to JewishFiction.net. And certainly that was in my mind when I selected the works for this book.
How did you choose the stories and how did you find them? I mean, how do they get to you? And as far as the book goes, there are many stories that are standalone stories, but there are also some that are excerpts from novels. And I was wondering if you could speak a little about that.
Well, just so your listeners know what we're talking about, we're talking about an anthology which I edited, which is coming out on October 17th, 2023, called 18, colon, Jewish Stories Translated from 18 Languages. And it's the first book of its kind in 25 years. And it's already, I'm happy to say, been getting glowing advanced reviews from Publishers Weekly and Dara Horn, Cynthia Ozick, all sorts of people. It is composed, as you say, Linda, of 18 works, some of which are stories, some of which are novel excerpts. And as I mentioned, I selected them from the oeuvre, I guess you could say, of all of the work in JewishFiction.net. You know, I picked them out of the 560 or whatever works that we have already published. I picked them, of course, by language. You know, for example, for the Spanish one, we've published Guillermo Sacomano. You'll have to, of course, forgive my accent. I'm not a Spanish speaker. Antonio Elio Brailovsky, Marcello Biermeier, Alicia Steinberg, Anna Maria Shua, Varda Fishbein. That's an example where in many of the languages that are reflected in this book, I had choices to make. It wasn't like I have published only one from that language, although that's true in a couple of cases only. I know that many people think that a novel excerpt is less interesting to read than a short story because they think of a novel excerpt as just a fragment as opposed to a cohesive whole, which is what a story is. When I pick a novel excerpt, when I accept a novel excerpt for JewishFiction.net, I never pick one that doesn't really stand on its own like a short story. You know, I'm the curator of this, so I'm not going to give people something to read that I would find frustrating, you know, just a little vorspeise, you know, a little appetizer of a work. There has to be a satisfying meal in there. So
let me just interject.
Sure.
That there were at least three of them that made me want to read the whole book.
Well, that's good, but that is good. What happens is, you know, in I don't know if how many of your listeners are familiar with the publishing industry, but one thing that happens is that publishers really like to have an excerpt from the book published online, if possible, or in a prominent print journal shortly before publication, precisely because of what you say. People will go, oh, wow, I read this online. I really want to get that book. So there's a whole phenomenon where JewishFiction.net helps publishers. The publisher helps us because we want those works. They're fantastic works. But we're also helping the publisher because we will time publishing that particular excerpt, you know, a month before the book comes out. So we're able to get some wonderful translations, and not just translations, works originally written in English in that way as well.
Is there any special way the book is organized, the order of the stories?
That's an interesting question, Linda. You know, this is the first anthology I've ever done. And there were all these things that I had to learn along the way, which were fascinating. When it came to actually designing the order of the stories, I hadn't given it any thought at all. I thought, I had given it little thought. You know, you don't want all the Holocaust stories bunched together, because if someone is reading the stories in order, and I'm using the term stories to mean stories or novel excerpts, I'm using the term generically, the works, in other words, you know, you don't want someone who's reading from beginning to end and going, oh, I can't read, you know, another Holocaust story in a row. Although, of course, the book isn't meant to be read that way or not meant to be read that way. People are free to read it however they want. So, but I did think in terms of sad stories, tragic stories, cheerful stories, whatever. I was thinking of emotional flow to the book. And then I discovered from reading that there's a whole art, there's an art and a science to ordering the works in an anthology. And I did a lot of reading on that. I found it all very surprising and very, very interesting. And I followed the advice of what I was reading in terms of emotional flow and bigger names, smaller names, and tone. And it's almost like, I don't know, putting on an outfit or playing a board game. You just sort of move around the tiles. Actually, it's sort of like when I put out a new issue of JewishFiction.net. I'm about to put out the Rosh Hashanah issue shortly before Rosh Hashanah, and you're moving around the pictures on the table of contents, and you just, at a certain point, it just looks right, you know? So I just kept doing that, you know, with stickies on a big pasteboard, on a big piece of cardboard. I kept moving them around until I went, yeah, that feels right.
I'd like to speak a little bit about the translations, because they're very important. And in the introduction, you say, as an example of the evolution of this field of translating, translations were once perceived as copies of original creative works, but now they're recognized by many as creative works unto themselves, as new works of art. And here I'm just going to interject a personal comment, which is that my mother, who was bilingual in Yiddish and who gave readings and such, always used to say that when a Nobel Prize was given to a writer in a language that wasn't very universal, they should have also given one to the translators.
Well, good for her. She was ahead of her time. Did she actually do translations?
Yeah, but not professionally. She did some for my programs. For holidays, ooh. I usually read short stories very often from Yiddish, and some of them were translated by her.
Oh, fantastic. She's obviously way ahead of her time. It's only now that I think, or not now, but recently, that translators are really demanding the recognition that they deserve. And you know, even the word translate, I mean, there's no way to translate. You know this certainly, Spanish, English, Yiddish, the languages you're familiar with. There's no way to directly translate one word for another other than in the odd noun. But if you're taking a sentence or a paragraph, you're interpreting what something means. There are dozens of ways to translate the same sentence. And actually, I was once at the home of Aaron Appelfeld, and he showed me two. He was trying to pick a translator, And he had asked them each to translate four pages, the first four pages of a new book, what was his new book at the time. And he just asked me to read both and see which I liked better. There was one that was far superior to the other, but the other was more, quote, accurate. Of course, I went in favor of the one that was better, but it's not really a translation. It's a translation plus because you're translating across culture. You're translating across realities, not just words.
Yeah, I have like four different translations of the Quixote.
Yeah,
They did a
exactly.
modern one, a recent one for the 400th anniversary of its publication in 2006. And
Who
it's
was that one? Yeah.
completely different from one that I have that's from the 30s that was my mother's.
Was it that was Edith? What was her name?
Edith Grossman.
That, yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that translation. I
Yeah.
thought it was brilliant. Well, she was brilliant. Yeah. I read that translation and I loved it. It was the first time I felt that I understood, I could access that book in a certain way. It was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Well, I just had this experience actually. I write novellas, and actually, after this book comes out, 18, on March 1st, 2024, I have a book coming out of two novellas. And one is called Yom Kippur in a Gym. So it's that one is a very Jewish one. But I love novellas, and I just read a new translation of a Thomas Mann novella, translated by Damien Searles, which completely blew my mind because I don't read German. I've read Thomas Mann all my life in translations into English. And this one presented me with a completely different Thomas Mann. I mean, humorous and sly and warm, not the stiff kind of Thomas Mann that I usually encountered. And that's totally to the credit of the translator. And he actually said that in his introduction to the book of, people don't seem to understand Thomas Mann correctly because he wasn't the way you think. And he's absolutely right. It was Chaotic Childhood and Chronic Sorrow, something like that, was how he had retitled, very well retitled, something that I read with a different title.
Now, you said that the works reach you already translated. And do you have any idea how much these translations reflect the original style or feeling of the authors, just like you were talking about Thomas Mann?
Well, no, of course not, because I don't speak these languages. I don't speak some of the I speak French, or I read French and Hebrew and some Yiddish, Turkish, Albanian, Polish, etc. No. Obviously, I'm very careful about who translates the works. Something comes to us. It happens with Yiddish because there's a wonderful program at the Yiddish Book Center in Amherst, Mass, where they basically teach or coach new translators of Yiddish. And so sometimes we get translations from beginners as opposed to recognizable names. And in some cases, I work very closely with them to help them. There's one, for example, that I just finished working with, which will be this person's first Yiddish translation. But for the most part, what happens, and again, this is back to the issue of the whole context of the publishing industry. For the most part, if you're a writer and you want your work translated into English, a writer in a non-English language, and you want your work translated into English, which virtually everybody does because English is the lingua franca, so to speak, now. Nobody is going to pay for that to be done unless you're already quite well established in your own language. So, for the most part, what happens is a publisher will pay to have a work translated that is already very successful in the native language, native country, in the hope of finding usually an American or a British publisher who will publish the translated work. That means, almost by definition, that you're getting the best or most experienced translators, for example, from Polish to English or whatever. So I, you know, all I have to do is look at the bibliography of the translator, but I just read it, and you read it and you go, this is marvelous. This just works beautifully in English. I don't judge based on experience, but almost all the time I'm getting people who are at the top of their fields as translators.
And you included biographical information about the translators, which was very nice.
I think it's really important. I really believe that. I mean, if it weren't for the translators, we wouldn't have these works. It's amazing. I was looking at some books that I had from the 60s and 70s, and they never included the translator's name. You know, they pay the translator, so that's it. You know, you pay someone to fix your car. You don't write their name on your car, you know. It was just amazing to me in retrospect. And on the title page of the book, the table of contents, you know, it's, you know, the title of the work and the name of the author, and says translated from Spanish by, you know, Andrea G. Leibinger. So I think that's very important.
Now, you mentioned the publishing date in October. How can our listeners, I guess, pre-order the book?
Well, it's available in all the usual places, of course, on Amazon. It's available on the publisher's website, which is Academic Studies Press in Boston. It's under the imprint Cherry Orchard, but you'll find it under Academic Studies Press as well. I believe it's also on Barnes & Noble and all sorts of, just about anywhere. I think they've got it in all the usual places.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to add that we might have left out?
Well, I just want to say that I love the story translated from Spanish that we have included in this anthology. It's The Guest by Varda Fishbane, translated, as I said, by Andrea G. Leibinger. It's absolutely brilliant. And I was interviewed not long ago and asked if there was any one particular story that, for me, encapsulated both the love of Jewish tradition and Jewish life and a certain ambivalence about it. And I picked this story, The Guest, and talked about it because, apart from the fact that it's beautifully written, beautifully translated, she's a marvelous writer, Varda Fishbane, and Andrea Leibinger's a terrific translator. It is such a beautiful evocation of a Seder and the work that's gone into it and the shining utensils on the table and the dignity of the grandfather who's leading it and all of that. And at the same time, it's a biting critique of patriarchy, of Jewish tradition, of its impact on girls and women. It's an absolutely fabulous short story. It's quite short, that really packs a punch. Very, very powerful. And I know that people who have read it love it as much as I do.
And you're going to allow us to publish a link to an excerpt from it. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Linda. It was a pleasure talking to you.
And you can get a taste of one of these stories, The Guest by Varda Fishbane, translated from the Spanish by Andrea G. Leibinger, by clicking on the link on this page. Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSephirod.com. See you next week.